This is the Employment Law Show.
All righty, Thursday night edition. We are set to get going. We're glad you're here. Thanks for joining us. John School, Stan Fainsilberg, Sam Firu, Tamark, and LLB. Stan is your lawyer tonight, spreading the knowledge and answering your questions. We'll get to a ton of email today, by the way. That's what we want to do, concentrate on those. Anytime you want to send one along, may or may not appear on a future show, you don't know. Could be help@employmentlawyer.ca, help@employmentlawyer.ca. And for any other matters, concerns, or ways to reach out to Stan and his team, you can go to pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. Great website. Been around for a few years now. It gives you access as well to the severance calculator, which does exactly what it's told to do, and that is accurately give you a number after about 30 seconds of using a couple different inputs. It's anonymous, and it'll tell you the severance you should be owed if it ever came down to the point where you're looking at a severance letter. Right? Again, pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. So now let's get it rocking and rolling. Stan, case of the day, pal. What do you got going on?
Hey, John. Good to be on the show with you. I wanted to discuss a recent case that I came across where, you know, a lot our listeners know very clearly from us the pitfalls when it comes to employment contracts, termination clauses, and the difficulties of drafting one and actually having it enforceable. But in this particular case, we dealt with a contract and a termination clause that on its face was completely enforceable, John. In fact, both parties seemingly agreed to that. The problem here is what happened afterwards. And so in this case, John, an employee signed an employment contract. He'd been with this company for probably about 20 years. He was a salesperson who received a base salary and commission payments on top of that base salary based on his sales.
Okay.
So he works for this company until about April 2022, at which point they let him go and they start paying him a severance. And this is the rub, John. The severance that they pay him is based on the base salary only. They didn't take into account the commission payments.
Right.
So the employee sues, and it goes all the way to court. And the question becomes, well, what do we do with this termination clause in light of the employer's actions here? Because it was very clearly inappropriate to not pay this person the commissions during the notice period, during the severance period. Again, commissions are wages. And the entitlement is basically the average of the last 12 weeks of wages, which would in this case include commission payments.
Right.
The company took the position that they didn't pay the commissions because there was a dispute as to the quantum and they couldn't agree with the employee. So they just ultimately chose not to pay it and go to court and let it all be figured out there, which was a absolutely terrible idea. You know, the judge stated from the get-go that he failed to understand why this company wouldn't have at least paid the commissions that they interpreted to be owed under the contract, because that was their interpretation, and they understood that it was their obligation. And ultimately, John, because the company failed to abide by its own contract, because it failed to abide by even its own interpretation of the amount of commissions owing, the court took the position that that company could not rely upon that contract whatsoever.
Wow.
In legal parlance, it's what we call repudiation. Essentially, that this company has said, we've decided we're not going to abide by this contract, and the court takes the position, well, you've made that decision. Now you can no longer use the termination clause in that contract to limit this employee's entitlements. And that's exactly what the court found here. It said that the failure to make the payments required under the termination clause is a clear and unequivocal breach of the central terms of the contract.
Wow.
And they found they had repudiated the contract, and that meant that this employee, despite a completely enforceable termination clause and contract on its face, ended up getting common law damages. So, you know, very important lesson for all our listeners and employer clients. It's not just about what's written on the piece of paper. You have to make sure that at the time you're letting people go, you abide by the contract. You do everything required under that contract. Otherwise, you may well find that you can't use it.
Great heads up. Good way to start. Karen, in early. Good evening. How are you?
Good morning. Good evening. Morning. Evening.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
I have a question. My son was recently let go from a job that it was an hourly pay, but he's been there for 4 years, and he was basically just saying, said, okay, we don't need you, you know, see ya, bye. due to lack of work. And I'm just wondering, is there any reason to look for severance of some sort? Because it was very abrupt, and it didn't seem they gave them any notice. They just said, see ya, bye.
Yeah, Karen, I mean, there's no... Just like any employee who is terminated in Ontario, that person would be owed severance based on their age, position, length of employment, and ability to find new employment in the future. So if they paid him absolutely nothing, not only do they owe him severance, that's a violation of our statute because, again, that employee would have certain minimum entitlements that the company has to pay, you know, regardless of, you know, his common law entitlements in this situation. And a failure to pay that can actually lead to even greater liability and greater damages against the company.
So it would be worth his while to get in touch with you guys to help navigate that, because literally they one day said, see ya, and like, don't let the door hit you on the way out.
It's absolutely worth his while.
Behavior. It was a lack of work or something to that effect.
A lack of work is not a reason not to pay someone severance. A lack of work is a reason to unfortunately let someone go, a completely understandable reason. But that doesn't absolve the employer's obligation to pay severance. It is always a great idea to give us a call, have a free consultation. The worst thing that comes out of that is, hey, you know, we tell you we can't help you, and you can move on knowing that you have that that certainty and that information.
Mm-hmm. So he's able to collect EI. Does that affect anything for him or no?
Yes, you can't collect severance and EI at the same time.
Okay.
So something we can discuss, you know, when he calls us and we evaluate his entitlements.
Okay, so you can't collect both, or you can't have one and the other.
You can have one after the other. You can't have both at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Karen, give us a call, or at least give Stan a call. Don't call me. I'm useless. Call Stan. And here's that number, 1-855-821-5900. Again, Karen, and for you as well, if you're listening, 1-855-821-5900. Okay, going to dive into a ton of email on the other side of the break. We continue Thursday Night Edition Employment Law Show rolls on. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Employment Law Show.
Reach out to Stan and his very capable team. Help at employmentlawyer.ca and 1-855-821-5900. Okay, Stan, first email. Let's get into this. Kathy Joseph, guys, my employer is trying to make me sign a contract for the first time in 20 years. They're saying if I don't, they will fire me, and I'm really scared. I don't know what to do. What do you guys think?
Well, Kathy Joe, you know, the first thing you need to understand is that nobody can force you to sign a new employment contract if you are already working there. The reality is that you have an employment contract. It might have been from 20 years ago. It might have been a handshake. It might have been implied or oral. But there is always, if there's an employment relationship, there's always an employment contract that backs that relationship. So if you don't want to sign that contract, you have no obligation to. That being said, the reality is also that an employer is allowed to terminate an employee for any reason at any time. So if they choose, in response to your refusal to sign this contract, that they would rather let you go than keep you around, that's their prerogative. But at the same time, they would, after 20 years of employment, they would owe you a significant severance, and I imagine they would quickly come to regret that decision.
Kathy Joe, we hope that helped. If not, reach out with a phone call afterwards as well. Let's go down to Tanya. Says, Stan, my employer terminated overtime pay, terminated the pay, made us, the employees, sign something before OT pay stopped. My question is that legal?
You know, John, I see variations of this all the time where it's usually not something as overt as signing a piece of paper saying,
right,
you know, you don't get overtime. But oftentimes you'll see companies have policies like, You can't get any overtime unless it's approved by the manager. But at the same time, they then give that employee 50, 60 hours of work in a week and expect them to do it in 40 hours.
Right.
And the key to understanding this, Tanya, is that overtime is a minimum entitlement. It's a guaranteed minimum entitlement for almost every employee in Ontario. There are some exceptions. So that's not something that can be taken away from you, nor is it something that you can even choose to give away. If your employer is making you sign a policy like this, then that policy is illegal on its face. And going back to my earlier example, even if the company has a policy that says, hey, you have to get approval from your manager before we pay any overtime, if they're forcing you to work 60 hours a week, well, that's all. That's the only thing that you have to prove, that you were required to do 60 hours of work to get the task done. If you can show that, then again, that policy is immaterial, because if it takes 60 hours to do the job, it takes 60 hours to do a job, and you're entitled to overtime or time and a half for everything above 44 hours a week.
If that becomes the case, you start sniffing around like, okay, they're making me work 50, 60 hours. Is that when you start, even though you could from day one, most people don't, but is that when you start keeping a diary of your hours just so you have some evidence of it?
You hit the nail on the head, John, because the hardest part of this is proving that somebody actually worked these hours. And if somebody feels like they're being wronged in this regard, I absolutely always advise them, keep a diary of your hours, you know, track what you can. Because even though that, you know, that log will ultimately be biased, obviously you're creating it, and so we, you know, you're obviously asking for overtime. There's a natural bias there. That doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. Those are contemporaneous notes, and frankly, I would say the onus would flip on the employer to prove that those hours weren't worked.
So there you go, Tanya. Moving forward, keep doing that, and you as well. Let's go down to Ike. Says my employer wants to get rid of my annual bonus because they're saying they cannot afford to pay it any longer. This is a huge part of my compensation. It's about a third, and I cannot afford myself to lose this money. Is there anything I can do about it?
Sorry to hear about the situation, Ike. You know, bonus, John, just like any other monies that are paid to employees, ultimately, if it's proven that through historical trends that, hey, this person got this bonus every year, you know, they came to expect it, it was an integral form of compensation, they can't just take that away. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like taking away that's like reducing someone's hourly rate from $50 to $20. It's very clearly a constructive dismissal in both situations. At the end of the day, you're taking away one third of somebody's compensation to do the same job. That's a breach of contract, and that's a constructive dismissal.
I guess it's one thing if it was, you know, the first or second year, maybe they got the bonus and all of a sudden it's not appearing anymore, but it sounds like here there's some definite history with Ike, so they can't just blow it off and say, yeah, sorry, not this year, guy, you're not getting it.
Exactly, John. You know, so with bonuses, almost every bonus plan contract I've ever seen calls a bonus discretionary, at the employer's discretion.
Right.
And, you know, it's comical because they'll say it's at the employer's discretion, but it's based on you hitting the following targets. Those are antithetical ideas. It can't be discretionary and based on explicit metrics.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, because they think everything is discretionary, it's just they treat it differently and feel like it's not just, frankly, compensation. But at the end of the day, that's really all it is.
Let's get Mike's email in here. By the way, if your email does not appear on the show tonight or get read out on the show tonight, you can always keep sending them along. They do get answered by Stan and his team, help@employmentlawyer.ca. I had a phone call there, but it hung up. We'll see if we get them back in. Mikey says, I had an agreement with my boss that I would go off and get migraine headaches looked at. Was off 5 weeks. When I came back, he sent me to his other business in another town, which wasn't our original agreement. When I protested, he said it was his business and he can do whatever he wants. Is that true?
Well, Mike, there's a couple of things going on here. Number one, you know, there's human rights elements going on. You have a medical condition, clearly, and that provides certain protections, both under the ESA and medical leave protections, as well as the Human Rights Code. So coming back from a medical leave, under the Employment Standards Act, the leave provision is very clear. You are to be given your job, or if that job for whatever reason no longer exists, a comparable job. And clearly that's not what's going on here. And secondly, on top of that, I think there's a constructive dismissal element, because if you work in, you know, location A for 10 years, and then they all of a sudden tell you go work at location B, and assuming it's a significant burden, I mean, assuming it's not just across the street or something,
right?
If it adds a, you know, 30, 45 minute hour commute each way, No one has to agree to that without their consent. That's a very clear to me breach of contract, and allows Mike to claim constructive dismissal as well.
Mike, again, any further questions, use that phone number. Call Stan at the office. Ada's up next says, I was recently terminated but told that I have to stay in work until the end of May. Do I have to stay at this point, as it seems unbearable for me to work for a company that has terminated me already?
Mm-hmm. So, Ada, I completely understand, you know, your feelings and your predicament. Nobody wants to be at an employer that doesn't want them. The reality, though, is that one way to satisfy someone's entitlements is to give them actual notice. Notice that your job is ending at some point in the future and that you should prepare accordingly. And that's what it sounds like your employer is doing here. There's nothing you can do to avoid that. That being said, if this is causing you significant medical issues and pain, you can go speak to your doctor and see if your doctor will provide you with a medical note that says you're not able to work at this time. Because if you get that type of medical note, that will satisfy the burden to do the working notice, while at the same time allow you to continue accruing your entitlements for that period, even though you can't work.
Right. That's why I guess some businesses choose to do, you know, they have you continue on work rather than just give you, maybe they can't afford severance. They can't afford to give you a year at a time. So maybe it's you work for 6 months, and at the end of your working notice, we're going to give you a 6 month lump of money, I guess, right?
Yeah. Or sometimes, you know, companies have some foresight and they know they're going to be shutting down a department or a facility or something a year from now. And, you know, they utilize this method to avoid that long-term payment and the long-term obligations that employees have. So yeah, absolutely, John.
Trish is up next with her email. Says, Stan, my company just put me on a performance improvement plan, a PIP, and I completely disagree with this one. What can I do to fight this as the issue they have identified or completely made up? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, Trisha, performance improvement plans or an employee's view of your performance ultimately is subjective. It's their opinion of your performance. Unless, you know, they're going to terminate you for cause and make it a issue that gets placed before the courts, there's not much you can necessarily do to change their particular subjective opinion. It's their own opinion. There are things you can do to safeguard yourself, from that worst case scenario of being terminated for cause. So if you're saying that they're completely making certain things up, you should go back, write them an email, and tell them exactly why you disagree with the whatever they've alleged in the PIP. At the same time, I always tell employees to end that email by saying, if there's something here that I've misunderstood or something that I've misconstrued, please tell me. Essentially, put the onus back on the employer so that if they're going to argue sometime down the line that, no, this is inaccurate, well, if it was inaccurate, why didn't you just respond and tell her in real time? It sounds completely disingenuous when you choose to say that during a lawsuit, you know, a year later. She asked you to respond. If you choose not to, then you got to live with what she's written. And you build up that evidence. And otherwise, you know, just do the best you can in terms of the PIP. Go through the motions. If they're going to let you go, then again, not much you can do to avoid that. The best thing you can do is to create the evidentiary record to avoid the worst potential outcome of being terminated for cause.
So if Trish has been asked to sign this performance improvement plan, does she have to be aware and note the fact that she's just signing to say, yes, I understand I've received it, as opposed to, yes, I understand and agree with everything written in it? Those are two distinctive things, right?
Yes. It depends what she's specifically being asked to sign. I agree with you, John. It's always best to be explicit. If you're signing something and you don't agree with its contents, just write in the margins, I'm signing this to acknowledge receipt. I don't agree with its contents.
Kelsey, up next. Thanks for that, pal, for that extra info. Kelsey says, I've worked through two separate employment agencies for the same company for over 20 years. They laid me off during the pandemic, and then in January, the employment agency terminated me. Is there anything I can do? Do I get anything?
Mm-hmm. Well, firstly, I mean, there's no question that the second employment agency, when it terminates Kelsey here, owes her severance. She is their employee. When you're an employee, when you're working for an employment agency on assignment, on paper at least, it is that employment agency that is your employer and therefore has to satisfy whatever your obligations are or your entitlements are, excuse me, upon termination. But the more interesting question for, that I see here, John, is whether the company that she worked at for 20 plus years, the same company she went into every single day, whether that company is her employer.
Right.
And from the, I've seen a few of these situations. Usually, I can tell you, it's the company itself that's directing the employee. They're directing what happens with their remuneration, directing what happens with their job. And I can bet you any money that when the employment agencies switched over here, it was at the direction of the company. In fact, I've seen situations where that exact thing has happened, where the company would tell the employee, Kelsey in this case, hey, go and apply for a job at this new employment agency because we want to keep you around. And that's disingenuous. Let's be honest. You know, that's why courts don't just look at what's written on pieces of paper. They will evaluate the true nature of the relationship. And if, you know, if the company that she worked at for 20 years, the company that she showed up at their facilities every day for 20 years,
wow,
is found to have a very clear and significant level of control over this employee, not only is the employment agency the employer, but very likely that company as well.
Let's get to Rajesh's email. This is not an uncommon scenario we've heard before. He says, guys, my employer is selling the business and tells me the buyer, well, they're going to hire me. However, it's been almost 2 months and I haven't heard a thing from the buyer. Can I still go after my former employer? What do you think?
Rajesh, absolutely. Whenever you have a sale of business, and usually when we talk about sale of business, John, we're talking about an asset purchase.
Right.
Because if you have a share purchase, there's no... You know, it's like the Waltons selling their shares in Walmart. It doesn't change, you know, Bob the Greeter's
right.
job in any way. But when you
gotcha.
Have an asset purchase, what actually is legally going on is that you are being terminated by the seller. And if the buyer chooses to hire you, the Employment Standards Act will force them to recognize your service. And there's certain other things that happen. In this scenario, though, we don't even have to go there because the buyer never hired this person. So very clearly, they were terminated by the seller and they're owed severance by the seller.
And there you go. That's about all we got time for, pal, but appreciate that. And thank you, by the way, for sending in all those emails. Keep them coming. We'll get to them on a future show. And you have time as well now to pick up a phone afterwards and get that number down and call Stan and his team if you have an issue you just want to talk about in length or in private. There's no charge to pick up a phone and call Stan and his team. Of course, that is right now, 1-855-821-5900. Again, 1-855-821-5900. That email address we always go to, help@employmentlawyer.ca. And that website with the severance calculator included, it's a beauty. That's pocketemploymentlawyer.ca. We'll catch you next time right here in the Employment Law Show.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Chorus Entertainment.